Miscarriages and difficulty getting pregnant are two incredibly difficult things to live through. And my guest today, my sister, Anne Barnes, knows the pain all too well. But her story is one of perseverance, hope, and maybe even a little divine intervention. So Anne, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yes, this is a new studio here for anyone who notices some changes in the background. And you are the first family member, at least to my knowledge, that I've had on the show. So again, thanks.
My pleasure. I don't really think I had a choice. No, I'm just joking. I had a choice.
Okay, so
I said yes.
Your story is really incredible. How long have you been married, first of all?
It'll be 3 years in October, so a little over 2.5.
And I guess we could preface this all with, you're pregnant right now. Mm-hmm. So the story has a very happy ending.
Yes.
It's about to have an even happier ending. How long have you been pregnant for?
I'm 27 weeks.
Okay.
So if you're going to ask me months, I'm not sure.
27 divided by 4? We don't have the time.
I think I'm almost into my third trimester.
Okay.
I think.
And things are going well?
Very well, yes.
Wow. Which is just a change of pace because
it is.
As we're about to dive into, you've had serious difficulty with getting pregnant and staying pregnant, I guess, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. Tell me about the difficulties. When did they start and what did they entail?
So we were married in October of 2019 and we conceived December of 2019, our first one. And that was, the first 8 weeks were fine. Well, I would say we thought everything was going to be great. You know, you're just going into it very naive. And then, you know, around our 12-week appointment, we found out that we had miscarried. And that was just very hard because you just never thought it would happen to you, you know. But, you know, it happened to a lot of people. Miscarriages are very common. So, but it was very hard for me because I also dealt with hyperemesis gravidarum, I think is how you pronounce it, with that first one. And from week 6 to week 12, I was vomiting and had nausea all day, every day. I lost about 10 pounds, and I just could not eat. And so going through all that, you know, the mantra was like, it'll be worth it. And then at that 12-week ultrasound, it was, you know, the baby had died. So it was just very crushing, but it happens. Like, it just happens. So so that was our first miscarriage.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said something about hyperemesis.
Mm-hmm.
And also, am I correct in saying that your first pregnancy – you lost weight through the process. You lost 10 pounds.
Anyone who's dealt with hyperemesis or HG, as some people call it, just know whether it's, you know, moderate or severe, it's miserable. Like, the smells make you nauseous of anything, even like the smell of your own hair, your water, food, you know, things like that mixed with vomiting. Like, anything I ate, literally anything I ate or drank, I would vomit it up all the time. And I just didn't know how I would survive. I remember thinking, I can't survive another 6 months like this, you know, like physically. My chest was hurting. My heart had heart palpitations just from starving and dehydration. I just remember on average, I would go to the bathroom maybe like urinate once a day, maybe, and it was the darkest urine because I couldn't keep anything down. And as a first-time mom, I just had no idea. I thought this was normal. Like, I didn't know I needed to go seek help, you know, things like that. And even some of the medication I was on just didn't help at all. So anyone who struggled with HG or hyperemesis, it's awful. Literally, it was the hardest penance I've ever had to do. And I offered it up as penance, but it was the darkest time of my entire life because I wanted to die. Your emotions are like depressed. You like deal with depression just because no one and nothing could help you. And you're in this dark place in your own mind. You're just thinking, do I even want this baby? Like, is it even worth it? Yes, of course. You're always struggling with this internal battles of, you know, this is what God gave you, this baby. You should be happy. I can't do it. I can't do it. I remember praying, Lord, you got to take me because I can't go on, you know. And I would just offer it up as penance as much as I could because I was like, there's nothing else I can do. Like, I'm just suffering. I might as well put it towards something. But yeah, that was really, really one of the darkest times of my life.
So it was nausea every day, throwing up every day. Was there also pain involved?
Oh yeah, when you have nausea, you just don't feel good. And nausea all day, all night. And because of that nausea and that vomiting, your stomach hurts. And then you have acid reflux because your esophagus is just eroded. Mm. And then, you know, because you don't eat, your joints get really achy and they hurt. And because they hurt, you can't sleep because of the nausea and vice versa. And everything just kind of intertwines and it's so overwhelming. And you just don't know how people, it made me think, like, people in third world countries, I had to pray for those people when I was going through this hyperemesis, because I'm like, they have no access to medical care, you know, or prenatal care, or even the people back then, you know, before we had all these prenatal care and like these doctors who knew how to help all these medicines, these women would just suffer, if probably die, from just starvation or dehydration, because eventually you can have a heart attack. Eventually you can have kidney failure, you know, if left untreated. So
what is hyperemesis exactly then? I know it's the name of the sickness that you were experiencing, but what's going
on? So emesis, I believe, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not really sure, but emesis, I believe, is vomiting, and hyperemesis is like extreme vomiting. So hyperemesis is severe nausea, vomiting, and dehydration. And it just kind of varies on a scale for each woman.
Okay. Is it the product of some hormonal imbalance, some diet-related thing, or what? Genetic?
I can't answer that. I have no idea. I just know it's more common than people think in women, pregnant women, I should say, because it gets left undiagnosed all the time. Because some people don't believe in it, or they think it's normal. Like, I thought it was just normal, you know, pregnancy, when people say sickness. No, it's not normal. Go seek help from your OBGYN or midwife or someone, because it's not normal. It can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And just curious then, what, you were in like the worst agony of your life, the darkest place. You were depressed, in chronic pain, probably sleep deprived. Someone tells me you wouldn't be, and I remember, you wouldn't be in the best mood, and people couldn't help you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess two questions. We'll start with the first one. What did this have any strain on your relationships, familial, in your marriage? And what did that look like, if you don't mind me asking?
I would say not really with family. I didn't live near you guys or mom or dad, but it was more so like my husband and I, he had to become a caretaker. He had to learn how to do all the dishes, clean the house, do the laundry, because I couldn't even carry a laundry basket. I couldn't even walk across our studio apartment without being like straight up or without heavy breathing. I would just be in such agony. He would be, because he also suffered with me, not physically, but, you know, his social life kind of dwindled too, because he had to take care of me, you know, and he had to get out like for his mental sake, but then I was stuck alone. You know, like, why can't I go out? You know, it's like misery loves company, but I understand it was kind of, we had to learn what was healthy for him once in a while to get out, but also you have to take care of your wife type of thing. So it was just that finding that balance. I think that was the toughest part.
Right. And I guess that in order for him to continue to give you proper quality of care, he would need to replenish his social batteries a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Otherwise, like, would you ever notice him getting a little grumpy or a little short with you after a while?
A little bit, yeah. And there was times I'm like, you can't bring home this food. You can't bring, because he'd do the grocery shopping. That was the first time he did grocery shopping. And I still, to this day, I hate those things. They're like honey, garlic. What are those? Like,
not the wings.
Gardettos or something. Honey, it was something awful. And he bought those on the grocery run. And I remember when he opened the bag, I smelled them. And I was like, it like made me so nauseous. Mm-hmm. It was an awful. Because when you have hyperemesis or even pregnancy, when your sense of smell is so heightened.
You already have an incredibly high sense of smell.
It was torture. It really was.
So did he open the bag from across the room and you smelled it type of thing?
Oh, yeah. I smelled it and then I said, stay away from me. like that just instantly made me angry. Uh-huh. And then he would try to come talk to me after brushing his teeth, and I still smelled it. And I was so angry at him because he kept eating them. He like didn't throw them away. He's like, I'm going to eat something that I enjoy. I was like, but it makes me sick, you know, type of thing. But no, that was tough. I still hate those things. Mm-hmm. But it was those, once you open the bag, I could smell like the chemicals, you know, in it too or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was awful. And basil smelled like litter box to me, you know. So spaghetti was awful. We couldn't eat that. I mean, it was just terrible, Paul. I can't even tell you. And we had well water. It was the first time we had well water because we moved out in the country when we first got married. And I hated the smell of well water. It smelled like piss.
Yeah, you can hear fine. Okay. People said much worse.
The tractor cab is the mission control of the entire farming operation. Worn out and outdated tractor cabs lead to annoying discomfort, hindered productivity, dangerous sound levels, and lower resale value. This is why you need to revive your tractor cab with Fair Cab Interiors. Today, we use our vast facility in the cornfields of Illinois to manufacture high-quality custom tractor upholstery for over 750 models from the 1960s all the way through to the 2010s. Our team of product engineers carefully design each new part, emphasizing product fit and ease of installation for anyone to install. We offer acoustical foam panels, ProForm plastic panels, headliners, floor mats, door and window seals, seats, and much more. We carefully monitor lamination quality, use premium grade foam, and utilize the highest standards of raw materials when manufacturing. With our massive inventory and delivery trucks that pick up daily, logistics are a snap. Our call center is manned not by robot answering machines, but real, experienced, and knowledgeable people who will provide you with installation tips, product details, and help with any questions you may have before or after the sale. But don't just take our word for all this. See what people are saying on faircab.com and Google reviews, where we've earned over 2,000 five-star reviews.
When the time comes to fix up your aging tractor interior, try out the cab interior experts at Fair Cab. Visit us at faircab.com or give us a call at 815-692-3355.
Yeah, I mean, it was terrible. I was in such agony. The shampoo I was using and hair conditioner, like I remember I didn't want to shower because I hated the smell. It was so hard for me to physically just get the energy to shower. Like, it takes a lot of energy if you don't feel good. And then just the smell of the shampoo and conditioner made me want to vomit. And I hate it because then I had to sit with it and my hair would smell like it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So it's like on top of all the pain, the nausea, the eroded throat, the you're losing weight, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. The list of things that you find repulsive grew like times 10, and then it got 10 times worse also. So more things smell horrible and they smell way worse.
Oh,
or they
terrible.
Taste way worse.
And that's there's just no escape from it. That was the only thing. There was just no escape. You're always sick. You're always nauseous. Something's always bothering you, whether taste or smell or, you know, whatever.
At the time, you were living in a very small studio apartment. I mean,
studio.
There were no rooms. There was just a bathroom and a square, and that's where everything happened. The kitchen was right next to your bed, which was on the floor.
I know. We still live on the, or sleep on the floor.
You still sleep on the floor? You have a big old house.
We don't have a huge house. We have a two-story house, and we still sleep on the floor on our mattress.
And like you have a basically finished living room. Like, it looks very nice. Your kitchen, everything. Still sleeping on the floor.
Yeah, we don't even have any furniture. We're just not fast-paced people, I guess.
How long have you lived in this house?
It'll be a year in September. I know. And Alex, my friend, just came over yesterday, and she said, it looks like you still have just moved in. I'm like, I know.
Wait, how long ago did you say you moved
in? In September.
Wow, so about almost a year. Yeah. It's coming on a year.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. I just don't want to just throw junk into my house, you know, just to make it nice. It doesn't matter, but yeah.
So after this first, so how long into it until you realized that the baby had unfortunately died? You said 12 weeks or?
So, I was a day before my 12-week ultrasound. I found it at work because we had ultrasound come once a week and I had actually passed out that day before my appointment because I was on this new medication. And I was Well, I passed out because it was called Phenergan, and I took a whole dose. And I was, that's one thing. All this oral medication I couldn't take because I would just vomit it up. So I had to take suppositories.
Explain what suppositories are.
I knew you were going to ask that. Up the bum or up the vat, like just up somewhere.
Just right into you.
Yeah, so you can have vaginal or rectal.
That's crazy.
So I had to, it was the most degrading. That was another thing. It was degrading because I had to sit and lay in a certain position to put this rectal suppository, like a wax torpedo ball. Like I had to don gloves. Oops.
You had what?
I had to don gloves. Like I had to put gloves on.
The yellow
on.
Things like for dishwashing?
No, no,
stuff?
Not don. I had to put on gloves.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You had to, oh, you had to put on gloves.
Yeah.
I thought you had don
gloves.
Like don
just
so. How far are you going?
No.
You had to put gloves on.
Yeah. I had to put gloves on, and then I told Patrick to get out of the room because we live in a studio apartment.
So we had to go into the bathroom or outside, yeah. And down in the garage.
And I had to lay like a certain way to get my self all situated and stick it right up in there.
How big was it? Can you show me with your?
It's probably like that big.
Like that long?
Yeah.
So an inch long by, okay, so it's like a gigantic pill that you could take orally.
Yeah, but it was like wax. You had to keep it in the refrigerator. So anyone who goes in the refrigerator, because it'll melt. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to melt into your system.
I see.
So, and it, I did it right before work. It was the first time. And I probably took it like at 7 a.m. And then I was driving and took a whole dose. I think I took like, I think it was a 50 milligram Phenergan. And it was a nausea med, but then it's also can be, I learned later that it's also used as a sedative. And so I was driving to work and I started to get so tired. I don't think you're supposed to drive on this, honestly.
Probably not.
But sure. I remember my vision was getting all like blurry and I was like, oh, well, at least I'm not sick, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I'll take it. So I get to work and by lunchtime, I'm like this. I'm literally like dozing off and then, you know, I haven't really eaten anything. And then I ended up just passing out right before lunch. And luckily I work with nurse practitioners and doctors and nurses. And people just came to my aid. They gave me fluids. I was really dehydrated. And they just said, I think you just took too much Phenergan. And I was like, but I'm not sick right now, you know. But so they did an ultrasound on me just to check the baby, and that's when I found out.
Oh.
And I found out at work, and so everyone else found out with me. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Like, I went through all of that, and I was kind of hysterical. I kind
of
looked back.
And it would make a lot of sense, oops, to people to mention that you work at a doctor's office.
Yeah.
That's why.
A primary doctor's office.
Primary care,
yeah. But, yeah. And so everyone found out when I found out, and I was kind of hysterical because it just crushed me. And I look back, I go, oh, I wish I would have handled it better. But at the time, like, that's just how I felt. I was crying because I had just gone through all of this nausea, vomiting, weight loss, everything, just for nothing. That's what it felt like, for nothing. So
now, there's, as we said, a lot of women go through this. Maybe even, I almost want to say something like half of the women I know have had a miscarriage at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, statistically, the more kids you have, you're bound to have one eventually. Maybe. I don't know what I'm talking about. But what did it feel like after that first initial miscarriage? Did it come after prolonged difficulty getting pregnant? But just tell me, what emotionally did it feel like? Because I think this is what
after
women
the first,
would want to know.
After the first miscarriage, I was still had my my faith. You know, I was like, oh, it happens. Because our sister-in-law and our sister had a miscarriage. I don't know if you knew that.
The sister. So, Katie.
Katie.
Of course. That was the first time I ever experienced anything like that.
Before Aubrey was, they had a miscarriage. And then Bridget, before Clay, had a miscarriage.
Okay. I did not. I don't think I knew that.
Maybe you need to check your phone more.
Yeah. There's a group message that I don't really.
No, that
check
was
that
years
off.
Ago. Wait, long time ago.
Sorry, but. Bridget. You'll probably watch this. I feel like I'm an absolute jerk.
Now I feel bad. You're just spilling the beans like on camera. No. So, and then Grandma Reese had a miscarriage. Not her first one, but.
Right.
But yeah, I thought, oh, it happens, but we'll have children. No worries. And so. And it was funny because I had a DNC, which is dilation and curettage, for that miscarriage. So it was obviously dead. So they went in there and they said it could take like weeks for it to come out on its own. And I said, no way. I want to be done. I want to get this chapter of my life over with. Like, because I was still sick because my body was still producing some hormones. You know, I don't know what the issue was. I was like, no, let's schedule this. So we scheduled a DNC, dilation and curettage, where they go in and they dilate your cervix and they scrape your uterus to, you know, to extract the remains.
To get the baby out.
Yeah, just all of it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we had. And that was fine, you know. But that's one thing. One thing I learned is I had to ask because, you know, that's life. You know, that's for us, me and Patrick, like, that's our child. And so they were just going to schedule it, and then that was it. And I remember asking doctors, like, they were about ready to leave. I said, this is before I had the surgery. And I said, wait, what's going to happen with the baby afterward? And they're like, well, there's two options. You can take it with you, which is a harder one, or you can get it back. The remains, we just give it to OSF, and once a year or twice a year they have this mass grave for miscarriages, funeral for miscarriages, and they just bury them all together, you know. And I was just like, no, like, my kid has a family, you know, we love this baby, like, it's not going to be buried in a mass grave even though it's OSF, you know, type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, once a year. So I was like, no, we'll take it. And said, how do we take it? And then she said, well, you have to call a funeral director because it's human remains. And I was like, that's fine. It almost made it seem, they made it seem like, okay, that's more difficult, maybe more paperwork for them. I don't know. I just didn't like their demeanor about it, I guess, what I would say. It was just more like, okay, you know.
Were you at like a Catholic doctor's
office? No, I don't go to this OB. There's nothing wrong with this OBGYN office I used to go to. It was just, I don't know. I don't want to say anything bad about mm-hmm. them because it was just, we looked at our baby's life way different than, like, it's just dead. Mm-hmm. You just got to scrape it and move on. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And so that's one thing I learned. So I was all upset because I was like, I want those remains. I want them buried. We have a family cemetery or Catholic cemetery where our family's buried at. So after all that hysteria of a miscarriage, now I have to figure out, like, who I'm going to call because I want our baby. You know, for me, it was important. I want those remains.
Right.
You know, to bury. And so luckily I called Duffy
Pills Memorial Home
in Fairbury. Sure. And I talked to this one lady. She wasn't Debbie Duffy or anything. She worked in the one in Chenoa, I believe. And she was so nice. And I said, I just want my baby. Please, can someone just go pick it up after we have this procedure? And they're like, oh, my gosh, absolutely, Anne. They were so kind. And they're like, absolutely, it is your child. We will go, no matter how small, we'll go and pick them up, you know?
Wow, that's very nice. Shout out to Duffy Pills.
Yeah, I know. And so it gets better by Duffy Pills. So then Debbie Duffy called me later because it's human remains. You have to, you know, get all this information from me and Patrick, like where we were for death certificate. And, you know, she was so kind. And then Rob Duffy called me, said, you're doing the right thing. You know, this is great. And, event ended up, he asked Father, well, we buried him on top of
Father Archer at Father St. Andrew's in Fairbury.
Yep, he asked Father, because I said, well, can we just bury him on top of my grandpa, John Reese? Because I'm not going to buy a plot just for a small little guy, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so he asked Father, he asked Grandma Reese, and they both okayed it. And so, you know, weeks later, after I had my procedure, they got the remains. And yeah, and we were going to pay Rob Duffy. He said the urn, or the container they reuse, it was going to be $100. And we went to pay him after Father said a little short memorial service for this little baby. and he gave it to us donation-wise. Like, he donated it to us, no cost. Oh. And I was like, and I still look back, I'm like, why didn't I need to donate back to Duffy Pills Memorial Home? But I haven't. But I mean, that meant so much to me. You know what I mean? And for Father to go out there and say a prayer. And so I would say, after you have a miscarriage, it's not just, that's it. You know what I mean? For us, it was, we had to bury this baby. And
right. Well, because this was a child that had a soul.
Yeah, exactly. This child had soul.
As important as you and I.
Yeah, and exactly. So, yeah, that I'm looking back and I just think it was a lot of turmoil, but it all worked out. Like, people were so, I would say Fairbury people were so nice. You know, the people I knew from my hometown, just so nice. And a time of just, that just wrecked us, me and Patrick. They were just the kindness. I need to donate money back to them so they can help people like us, you know, people in certain situations. So
Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury is my favorite grocery store, not just in Central Illinois, but in the world. And for good reason. They have the most incredible customer service, friendly carryout workers, an exquisite and affordable bakery where fresh baked goods are prepared daily, and a deli market that is truly top-notch, that provides plenty of seating, delicious food, and even free coffee, if you can believe that. And their canned meats are out of this world. This is all just the tip of the iceberg, though, so if you haven't been here, you are really missing out. Come check out Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury, Illinois, where they've been wowing the customer for 72 years.
Do you think that the formality of how everyone responded, the funeral service, Father Archer coming out and saying, you know, giving a service or saying the prayers, the formal burial, etc., etc., was that therapeutic? Some people might think that that would be more traumatic, add to the trauma, add to the sadness.
It was very therapeutic. It was, all right, now I can move on because they're laid to rest, you know.
Name them or anything?
We named all three of our miscarriages because even though we didn't know the gender, they still had a soul. And I know everyone deserves a name. So that's why we named every single one of them.
And as you just said right there, three miscarriages. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of miscarriages. Mm-hmm. The next two, what were those? What were those like? And surely this had to start weighing on you more and more.
Oh, yeah. So after my DNC, I had to wait at least 2 weeks, I know, before we could have intercourse again because you're healing, you know, you just had a miscarriage. You just had a DNC. And so those 2 weeks were up. And then from my DNC to when I found out I was pregnant, it was probably like 4 or 6 weeks. And I was waiting for my period to come. They said it might take a couple weeks to get your body back to where, you know, it needs to be. Anyway, I remember I went to take a drink of something and it smelled very, very strong. And I said, oh my gosh, oh no, like PTSD, like, oh no, why do I smell all the ingredients in this? Mm. And so I took a pregnancy test and it was positive. So
wow,
I never,
you could actually tell then. So that's not just some mythical thing. Like, you can tell, I know when I'm, like, you actually.
Yeah, but I wasn't happy. I was scared. I was like, oh no. So yeah, I never had my period after my DNC. I got pregnant right away, which happens. And we were happy, but I was so scared. You know, so scared that I was going to get sick all over again. But what can you do? I had no choice. You know, I was like, this is what God's will. Like, if I'm sick, I'm sick. There's nothing I can do. But we were happy. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting for this nausea to happen. Week 6, no nausea still. The doctor said my blood work was coming back normal. So they check you in the beginning to see if you're, well, now I forget. See if my HCG level's going up, progesterone or estrogen's going up, something like that. Some level's going up, meaning like your baby is developing, you know, and it was. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is great, but I'm not sick, so I'm kind of scared, you know, like, why am I not sick? Because that's all I knew. And then I went for my 8-week ultrasound, and it showed I had a miscarriage. And this was at COVID, right during COVID, right at the start of COVID. So I had to go in by myself. like Patrick couldn't go in with me. So I had to look at that and hear those news all by myself at the ultrasound. And I just remember it was like someone punched me in the stomach, you know, and I had to sit there by myself, you know, no one to hold my hand. And they're just like, I'm so sorry. Just what can you say, you know? And I had to, I was trying to act tough, but I just wanted to cry, you know what I mean? And then I talked to the doctor after the ultrasound, and she just said, sorry, you know, sometimes these things happen. It might be an issue, like there might be issues going on, you know, type of thing. And I don't even remember because I was just sitting there. I'm like, I just want to leave, you know. And then she's like, well, we're going to check next week to see if we're still, like, correct, like it's still, like, dead. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to get extract a baby or, you know, pass a miscarriage, force a
I don't even know, but I know what you're saying. You don't want to make it happen, like cause a miscarriage way of thinking it's a miscarriage.
Right. So, well, it was just one double check before
sure.
you take medication to pass this miscarriage. That's what I was saying. Mm-hmm. So I waited a week, still showed no signs of growth. So they gave me the, I don't want to say it's the abortion pill because I'm not entirely sure, but it was Cytotec, and I inserted that vaginally to make my cervix dilate and open up and flush out my uterus. The way she explained it she downplayed the whole thing. He's going to have some discomfort, some cramps, bleeding. You know, you can take it at night if you want, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, good enough. Let's move on. Paul, I kid you not, I took it that night. I went to bed around 9 p.m. and at 11, I woke up with severe stomach cramps. And then from that time on to 6 a.m., it was like nonstop bleeding, contractions. Just, it was the worst pain in my entire life.
Worse than the first?
Oh, this is like my body's being forced to, you know, abort this miscarriage. It was, everything was working so hard. Oh my gosh. It was just a huge mess. Have you ever seen Unplanned?
Yes.
Planned? Is it Unplanned?
Unplanned, yep.
It was that scene where in the shower where she took that medication and her doctor at the abortion clinic kind of downplayed it.
And she's just writhing in pain, like on the floor.
Yeah, blood everywhere. That was me. That was exactly, but for hours, like throughout the whole night. And I was so close. I wanted to go to the emergency room just to get some pain medication. But I remember I was just like I was shaking. Like there was nothing I could do. It just kept coming and the cramps kept happening because I took this medication. And, you know, for us, and I would have to sit there on the toilet and I would catch whatever I could because our intent was to bury.
You would catch it. Wow.
Yeah. And it was just such a mess. And I mean, oh my gosh. And Patrick doesn't do well with blood. And I mean, it was everywhere all the time. I mean, it was intense, like very intense, so painful. But she downplayed it. And I was so upset. Like she downplayed it by tens and thousands of levels. You know what I mean?
How did she say it again?
You're going to experience some cramping, some discomfort, you know, in blood, you know. But you can take it at night. And Patrick Googled it. He said, never take it at night because you will never sleep. Take it during the day, you know. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. So, but that was brutal. I mean, it's brutal. And then, but we ended up. So I remember going to bed at 6 a.m. just shaking, hoping it's finally over. And it was. It was terrible. But we caught what we could. And, yeah, that was it.
So you did catch it.
We caught some
baby.
Mm-hmm.
And did you? Did you look at it?
No, there wasn't much to look at. Like it was just all bloody, and we just kind of put what we could in a container that we had, and so we didn't want to go through the whole funeral process again, or something like that, because we had it ourselves. So we went ahead and called Grandma. Said, Grandma, we had another one. Can we bury it on top of Grandpa next to the other, our first one? She goes, of course, of course. I'm so sorry. You know, so we bought a beautiful little, it's supposed to be a rosary box, but it was like Madonna and Child. We thought that was fitting. So we put the remains in there. And then Patrick and I went out to the cemetery and buried it ourselves, said some prayers, and that was it.
And wow.
Yeah.
There's a third one then, and it's these both, I mean, back-to-back ones, they sound horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a third one.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. So after our first one was in March of 2020, and then our second one was in May of 2020, our second miscarriage. And then we tried, excuse me, to get pregnant. Nothing until 2021, the year 2021. And I found out I found out on Easter that I was pregnant. And so it was almost a year from May 2020 to April 2021 or 2021. That was when we finally got pregnant. So almost a year before we got pregnant again. And it was hard. I mean, we were just like, what are we doing wrong? And so I finally got pregnant and I found out on Easter. It was so beautiful. We were like, wow, we found out on Easter. Like, it's meant to be. Like, this one's it, you know. And I didn't even make it a week before I started bleeding and having cramps. And I found out that I had, like, I took a pregnancy test and it was negative again. So I was like, I mean, that crushed me. I mean, crushed me. Because I was like, what are we, like, are we being punished? Because after the second one, I went to this lady to learn how to do NAPRO technology, how to track your cycle, your cervical cycle. I'm sorry, cervical discharge cycle. So the fluid and your periods, and you track it accordingly to see, because you can tell if like you're deficient in, let's say, progesterone, or if you may have, what do you call it? Endometriosis, that's what it is, or PCOS, some issues. And it's a really great way to figure out naturally what's going on. And you can kind of tell when you're ovulating. And so you know when to have sex during your ovulation period, you know, things like that. And I did that, but you have to wipe every time before you go to the bathroom. You need to do it all the time. I mean, it was really great knowledge to know, but it just weighed on me. And it almost made it seem like our intimacy was just scheduled. And it took a toll on us, for sure.
Sure. I could see how that could zap the romance out of it.
I remember I called you, actually, because mm-hmm. Patrick, he finally told me, like, it just seems like we don't do it out of love. We just do it out of, because it's scheduled.
Like a farmer in crops.
Yeah.
I think is the analogy.
Yeah. And
I
felt that made me feel terrible, you know, because it's all I thought about. I'm like, let's do it so we can have a baby. It
wasn't an overflowing of love.
Yeah, correct. And I finally kind of stopped. It took a lot out of me, too, because it's all I ever thought about. And so we finally just stopped, and we went to the doctors to find out why, you know. And so, long story short, we ended up having he went ended up doing exploratory surgery, so hysteroscopy with laparoscopy to see if I had endometriosis, and it turned out I had a lot of it. So he cut that out.
Endometriosis is what?
So your endometrium is some kind of tissue or hormone or something inside your uterus or something. I am not the correct person to tell you this, but it's what tells your body to bleed, to break down. So that's what tells your uterine wall to break down. That's what a period is you're flushing this stuff out. And sometimes that endometrium or something, whatever it's called, grows other places.
Oh, okay.
And so my cramps are really horrible and they're really heavy. because I had endometriosis in different places. And then my uterus was inflamed, but my fallopian tubes were fine. And it turned out I had strep B in my uterus as well from a biopsy he did. So he cleared me out, put me on antibiotic to get rid of that strep B, or that infection. And he said, you should try to have a baby. And I said, okay, like, we are cleaned out, you know, because at this time, all my labs, when you try to find out why you're having these miscarriages, a lot of that stuff's not covered by insurance, like lab work, and it wasn't. So we paid a couple hundred for certain labs. We paid another couple hundred to have this one procedure done where they put fluid through my uterus to flush out my fallopian tubes to see if anything was clogged. You know, that wasn't covered. And then we did the surgery, which was a couple thousand. Some of insurance covered it, you know. But, you know, Patrick and I, at this point, we were already on with that surgery. We were $10,000 in.
Oh, my God.
Well, I would say from the DNC all the way up to this surgery I had, the hysteroscopy with laparoscopy, we were already $10,000 in.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Come on down to Fairbury Furniture, where the furniture rocks.
Right. But we paid out of pocket. $10,000.
Wow.
From the very first pregnancy to this last surgery I had. And we told each other, like, this is it. Like, we're not, because you can financially go into a hole trying to figure out why, mm-hmm. ordering more tests, ordering more this, you know, that, this and that. And we had to tell ourselves, like, mentally, like, we can't do this anymore. Financially, we're not going to do it anymore. And I agreed with him. I said, there's only so far I'll go, you know, otherwise it's out of my hands. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, after that surgery, I was like, it was weird because I was like, I'm hoping they find something wrong because you don't want to have this surgery and have everything go right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And be nothing. So luckily, there was an issue and he was able to correct it, cut out the endometriosis, give me the antibiotic. And he thinks that this is at a new OB office when I had all this testing done. And he said, I think you're going to get pregnant soon. And soon wasn't the right word because we never got pregnant. And it took probably about 6 or 7 months till we find, which is a long time for us, you know, because you just think soon is going to be soon, like next month. And it wasn't. But I remember it had just freshly turned 2022 and it was January and Patrick and I had just had COVID and I knew I was going to start. I thought I was pregnant when I had COVID because I didn't have it that whole week. And then I took a pregnancy test after 7 days and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and it was negative. And then literally hours later, I started my period 7 days late. And I was like, what a rug to be pulled out from underneath me. Mm-hmm. And I remember just crying and bawling. Like, I was so angry. And from the second one on to this point, when we had COVID, my faith just dwindled. I was angry at God. I didn't pray when I went to church. Sometimes I would try. It was almost like, I knew he was real. I knew he was there, but I didn't like him. You know what I mean? I was so mad at him. And Patrick, you know, part of me was like, he's not taking them away from you on purpose. You know, he's not punishing you, you know, there is something wrong. But the other part of me is like, but he could give them to me. He could let me keep one. You know what I mean? And my husband, that's where my husband, his faith and the role of a husband to be the rock really came into play, because he would say, you have to pray, Annie. Like, you have to go to church. Because I didn't even want to go to church. And he's, you're going to church. You have to go, you know?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I can't. And he's like, you will. And I, you know, and it was just, he kept me from falling too far. And I love him so much for all that, because he would say, he's not punishing you, you know, because you get into your head, you become your own worst enemy.
Right.
And
these are the thoughts. You know, I mean, the devil can infiltrate mind.
And that's when he was taking up our vows, or he's taking our vows seriously, like through thickness and, or for worse, better or for worse, and, you know, sickness and in health. I think I said thickness.
Thickness?
Yeah,
how thick you
no,
are.
No, it's, yeah. No, but, so we really, because our goal is, we told each other as a married couple, is to get each other to heaven, you know, and I wasn't on my way to heaven, that's for sure, you know what I mean? So, shout out to my husband for being just a really great, what a husband is supposed to do, you know, for his wife. And, you know, so that was a really dark time, because at that point after COVID and I had that negative pregnancy test, I thought that we're not going to have kids. We're not meant to have kids. And we're thinking about adoption and things like that. And that's a lot of money, you know, all these things. And Patrick's like, don't give up. Don't give up. And I was like, we're not meant to have kids. And he started to think that too, you know. And I'm like, I can't give you anything. I can't give you kids. And he's like, that's not what I married you for, you know. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. And I'm like, it won't be fine. And later that day, I remember I told him, like, let's go to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help in Wisconsin. And
explain what that is for people who don't know.
So the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help in Wisconsin is this little apparition site. So someone, and it was approved by the Vatican, that someone, I think she was a sister or a nun, she saw a vision of Mary, you know, and they had to go through all these procedures to make sure it was valid. And it was, and it's the only one in America.
And what that vision means is basically that Mary appeared to her, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
In like the
and
woods.
And there
or
was
something.
Miracles that happened there, but I don't know all the details about it. So it would be like Fatima is an apparition site. Our Lady of Guadalupe in Guadalupe, that was an apparition site. And this one just happens to be in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The smallest, most remote area of Wisconsin. But apparition site nonetheless, a shrine nonetheless. And miracles have happened there when people go there. And I remember I told him, like, I want to go. I want to go there as soon as possible. You know, that was our last resort. That was my last resort. I was in such a horrible place, religious-wise, faith-wise, emotionally. This is like, medicine has failed me. Science has failed me. You know, maybe not science, but you know what I mean? And my faith was just on a little tiny thread. And I said, let's just go. Let's just go. And so 2 weeks later, we made the short pilgrimage there. We left at 5 a.m. in the morning, and we got there all the way to Wisconsin. I remember driving there, Paul. You should go sometime. But it was out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, maybe the closest thing was like a dairy farm, like a mile down the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the smallest little place in the middle of the country, and it was snowing, and it was so cold. But we made it there, and it's just this little tiny shrine down below this little tiny church. And you just go there, and you pray quietly to yourself. It's just a statue of Mary. And so that's what we did. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
So that's what we did. So we went there. We're like, are we in the right place? But we were. And it's very humble, very small, very cute and quaint.
It's not a giant cathedral or anything like that.
No. But we went there and we knelt down before the statue of Our Lady. And I just asked her for intercession. And I said, I was just completely honest, all bare bones, you know, the best kind of prayers you can have. And I said, I just want to have a child. Please, please, please pray for me. Like, please tell God I want a child to have. I want to conceive that I can carry a healthy, happy baby so Patrick and I can have children. Please, just please. You know, that's all it was. So it's, please just give us a baby of our own, you know. And that was kind of the premise of it. And then we went and prayed in front of, they had these beautiful little, what are those called, Paul? I can't think of the word.
That holds the Eucharist?
No. Yeah, they're like little.
The candles?
No. What Father Archer has.
Relics.
Relics. There's a whole cabinet full of relics. So we prayed in front of the relics as well. And all these relics are of other saints, some pieces of something or something that the saint touched. And they're relics, and you just pray in front of them, and you ask each one of these saints, the relics of these saints, to please pray for us. And that's what we did. And then we went to in front of the portrait of the Holy Family, so Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
I'd like to clarify one thing just because, you know, a lot of non-Catholics will listen to this. So you said that you pray to the relics, but you don't pray to the relics, nor do you pray to the statue. You're asking the saints to pray for you.
Yeah.
The Mary's, saints with who these relics are
correct.
Attributed.
So Mary is the highest saint, so we ask her to please pray for us because she's closest to God.
She's literally the mother of God.
And so we asked her to pray for us, not pray to her.
Yeah. Mary doesn't make the miracle happen. She doesn't manipulate reality.
She prays for us. Mm-hmm. And praying is just talking to God.
Right.
And then who's closest to God? Mary.
Right. It's like asking if I wanted the CEO of some company to do a thing for my business or something, I would ask someone who works in this office.
Correct.
Because they have much more power. They're a better person to ask than me to go straight to the CEO. Just to clarify, but
yes.
Okay, continue.
And all these relics are all these from different saints. We just ask all these different saints, please pray for us. The more people you ask to pray for you, you know, someone's bound to hear you. You know what I mean? So we prayed in front of the Holy Family, which is Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And we just prayed in front of that, asked Joseph, you know, please pray for us so we can have a child. And that was pretty much it. And it was very peaceful, a very peaceful couple of hours. And then we went to adoration afterward because right next door is their adoration, which is the actual Eucharist, the body of Christ on display. And we go there. We went to confession and we went to adoration. And, you know, it was just a very, very great day. And that was it, just a couple of hours. And then the next day we went skiing and we just made the weekend out of it in Wisconsin. And then we came home. And then 2 weeks after, we came home, I knew when I was supposed to, like what week I was supposed to start my period. And long story short, I never did. And I waited a week after my period. And I was like, please, please, please don't do this to me again. Like, don't set myself up just to be devastated, you know? And I had a positive pregnancy test. And I just remember being shocked. I'm like shocked looking at those two lines. And it was actually, there was a baby there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then kind of just, I wasn't crying, but I had tears coming down my face. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, Mary, all these saints prayed for me. Mary prayed for me. And now I'm pregnant. And then I did the math because of my past NAPRO technology charting. I knew when I may have ovulated, and the math lined up with the same day that we went to the apparition.
So the day that you went to that site and you said all these prayers, you went to confession, you went to adoration, is a night you conceived as well, successfully, with the baby that you're still carrying
right
now.
And we weren't even trying.
Wow. Like,
you know what I mean? It was just a miracle. Like, that is what it was. And it's what's crazy, and I tell people, I don't have the proper words to explain how much of a miracle this is. Because I go there, and you hear miracles happening when people go to the apparition site, or when people
to that
say
place,
any place, you know, or, you know, Portugal, I think, is where Fatima happened. And people go there for visits and for miracles to happen, to help heal them or something. Oh, and that's what I said in my prayer when I was at the apparitions. I said, please heal, please cure whatever is wrong with me, why I'm losing these, you know. And hopefully, you know, and all these thoughts come back. And I'm pregnant, and I just remember just crying, like, it happened to me. You know what I mean? Like, I go there, and that it's a miracle. Like, it's a, I don't have the right words, Paul. Like, I'm actually tearing up a little bit because of how amazing and divine it is. Like, it happened to me. I went there for that purpose, and it happened that night. And we have had no issues with our pregnancy, none. Everything has lined up perfectly. It's healthy, and we're happy. I mean, it's just crazy. Crazy.
Just after three gruesome, debilitating miscarriages.
Yes.
And just no sign of hope.
No sign of hope. Like, we were so close to losing. Like, I had little to no hope. No more trust. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just remember just saying, thank you. Like, thank you, God. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, everyone. Like, thank you. Like, thank you. And thank you isn't even enough. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, I'm still thinking, gosh, wow. Like, I go there. And it wasn't like in a year, I got pregnant. It happened that night. I asked and I got it, you know?
Ask and you shall receive, right?
It was, I still think about it. It's so bizarre. Like, and I don't want to say it like disrespectfully. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Disrespectfully, but it's just, it's so amazing. I can't hardly wrap my head around it. You know, why me? You know, like, I literally was so mad at God, but yet he gave me the gift of a child. Mm-hmm. Like, what? So undeserving. So undeserving. And then me and Patrick, when we found out, we went to adoration because we didn't know what else to do, like how to say thank you. And I mean, it's just been, the pregnancy's been hard with sickness, but it's been amazing. Like, the health, our child is just healthy. Every ultrasound has been great. Every lab work has been great, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm just so happy to say that. After three miscarriages and two and a half years of marriage, like, we are finally going to have a baby. And that's amazing to me.
Due in October, right?
Due in October.
Late October. You guys got married on the 26th. That's when you started dating, was the 26th. You were born on the October 26th. Mm-hmm. Patrick's born on October 31st. And this baby's supposed to come right around then. It'd be crazy if it was the 26th. And it might be. Who knows?
I don't want it to be the 26th. It's just too much on one day. Too much in one week.
Yeah.
But no. Yeah.
That's an incredible story. It's astonishing. It is one of hope, perseverance, incredible faith. It's amazing that you, although you're on the last thread of your faith, like you said, mm-hmm. you had enough to put it all on God, which is seems like that's what he wants you to do sometimes, is you're going to need me eventually, but I have to knock down all the other things that been leaning on, medicine, the doctor, mm-hmm. your understanding, this, that, and the other. You had nowhere else to go but God, it seemed.
Oh, yeah, and that's what the whole thing is. You have to – our best friend should be God. That's what he wants. Our ultimate goal is to get to heaven and – you know, our life here isn't, and that's one thing I learned. These sufferings, you can use them as just devastating depression things, but our sufferings are meant to be, you can offer them as penance, you know, so you can get to heaven. And that's what I've been trying to do throughout these last couple miscarriages. And that's crazy to say that I'm here now. Like, it's worth it. I don't want to say it was worth it. I'm here now, and I never thought I'd get here. And I just want to tell other moms, like, I get it. Like, I totally get it. Like, you are lost. You are angry. You see other women having babies, other women who are having abortions, people who you hear these horrible neglect stories or abuse stories. Like, give them to me. I'll take them. You know what I mean? Then why can't I? We, Patrick and I, try to do, you know, things by the book before we got married, and try to do things by the book when we were married. You know what I mean?
Like not living together before you're married.
Correct. You know, things along those lines. And, you know, like, why us? Why are we not having children? You know, and he has the whole plan. He does, but you can't see it. You are so angry because you just don't understand. And I get that. But man, the miracle itself of what happened to us, like our story for this fourth pregnancy, it all blows everything out of the water. Like, I can't even be angry about those because here I am now with this gift. You know, does that make any sense?
It makes perfect sense.
And I know some women wait 5 years, some of them wait like 10 years, and nothing happens. And I can't speak on that. I just know from my own experience, it was agony. Because you're like, what's the point of marriage? And that was us. But I get that. I can say that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. Just keep moving forward. Keep putting your trust in God. Even when you fall, you know, hopefully your spouse, your husband, will help you go towards what you guys, you know, vowed to each other to keep going towards Christ.
It certainly helped that you had an amazing husband.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I couldn't have done it without him. And I'm so glad that I can finally give him a child. I'm finally glad that I can have a child. You know what I mean? And I think it's only going to be up from here. So that's just my story. And I hope I can help other women going through things or similar things, that you're not alone. And pregnancy's not easy. I'll tell you that, Paul. Pregnancy's not easy. I'm grateful. Sorry. My hair's it's just falling down my head. I don't know if I have a slope on my head. No, pregnancy's hard, though. I'm so grateful for being able to grow this baby inside me. But it's not fun. It's not fun. It's hard on your body. I was super nauseous and with vomiting from week 6 to like week 22. Still suffer with some vomiting here and there. And your body goes through a lot of changes, not just weight gain, just your hips, your lower back, your back, you know, your chest, everything. It's not easy. And I think women should be able to say, it's not easy. It's not fun, but it's worth it. And I'm very grateful to be given this opportunity to, you know, grow my own child inside me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So.
Wow.
Anyway.
Your story is absolutely incredible, Anne. And hearing these details was amazing just for me. I was all ears. It's one of hope, perseverance, grit, toughness, heartbreak. It's got everything. And it really is incredible. And I know for a fact that a lot of people, especially women who are struggling with their pregnancies, maybe who have had miscarriages as well, are really going to respond to this well and appreciate it a lot. So, Anne, I love you, and thank you so much for coming on. It's truly been an honor.
Thanks for having me, Paul. I love you, too. I love you.
And thank you, everyone, so much for watching and listening to The Paul Garcia Show. God bless, and have a great week.